So I want to give a talk and some reflections, and then we're going to have groups to kind of work on the issues. And it's really about what drives us. Where do we go from here? At a time when there's lots of confusion and some deep confusion. confusion also about how such a thing can happen, how violence at that level can happen and is happening right now. But also, how can I act in the middle of all of this? Where do I act from? What are my sources of intention? And and some very deep questions about karma. How can such a thing happen? How can children be killed and in such a devastating way, but never mind which sides, children, and it's happening. And so what does that say about karma? And I want to address, it's not that I'm going to come up with answers, but I think we do need to kind of look and see what a Dharma view of these questions, and maybe opening some doors or some places of insight. So I do want to start with karma, because it's such a big story, and it really is behind a lot of our view of the world and our view of why we practice. And so it's not just a theory from the East somewhere. It's actually a very alive understanding of our world and how things happen, and also what we do when we practice, how we can change ourselves, how we can change the world. So it's a lot of dimensions to it. The Buddhist teaching, and the Buddha himself, in text after text after text, basically said, if you think you know it, you don't. But what he really meant was, if our mind, which works dualistically, our thoughts are dualistic. Our thoughts are yes, no, this, that, this theory against that theory. That's the way the mind works. It basically says life isn't like that. For example, the dualism between chaos, nihilism, nothingness, or determinism, which means everything is written down. After Yom Kippur, you know, it's written in the book up there. You just need a chotemet from the pakid lamala. It's all constructed beforehand. Goral and fate is written down somewhere. So the Buddha said both of those are dualistic and not helpful. They're not helpful in understanding the world, and not helpful in our development. And he said that the middle way is between that, and the Buddhist world is defined as the middle way. That's the middle way is a description of the Buddhist teaching for thousands of years. But it's not that it's a kind of middle ground, a compromise. What it really means is the middle way is a vast teaching of process, change, and not dualistic, nor this end nor that end, between the two. Someone once said, there's bookends, right? And when you have books on the shelf, you often have something that holds the books, and they're called bookends, a bit of metal that holds them. In the, between all the books and all the knowledge is in between the two ends. And what it basically says is that everything is dynamic and in relationship and in process. There isn't a world. There is a process. There isn't a thing. There isn't a person. There isn't a Stephen or a Leela or a Nathanael. There is a living process happening in which Nathanael might say, my name is Nathanael and I'm a person. And Stephen might say, I'm here, my role, my tafkid as a teacher, whatever is defined and so on. Not at all. This person is indefinable, is a process of life making, changing forms and shapes, and every minute making another being, which is a package like your question yesterday. We package it into a label called Stephen, but that's just packaging. Where is that? So whenever you look, you see much richer places of process, of change, of dynamic worlds. And it's deeper truth. It's not just the Buddhists that say it in Kabbalah. If you look at the Kabbalah, for example, I don't want to go into it, but it says that the world is somewhere between din and chemla and rachamim and
grace.
As
grace,
yeah. Between the two, it's neither this nor that, and that when God made the world according to din, meaning structure, laws, constructed world, it didn't last 5 minutes. It disappeared, because you can't make a world like that. The world is between form and the formless. So we're talking about between places. It's between. And the between is really dynamic. So an understanding of karma would say that the karma is a kind of a habit of the way things are constructed, including the way we see things. So we and the world are making each other all the time, according to a blueprint model of that's just grown by itself. It's happening by itself. So we see the world in a certain way because we're built to see the world like that. So we and the world make each other. We're built to see, because we have eyes, we see light. The light made the eyes make the light. Where does it start from? Ask my chickens with the eggs. Where does it, if you ask the chicken, you know, which came first, you or the egg? It all comes together. It's all dynamic. It's all making itself as it goes along. That's the understanding of karma. So the mind is shaped by the world to make the shape of the world. The world and the mind shape each other. Difficult to understand, but there isn't really any other way. All the philosophers say it in the end. In the end, the great philosophers say pretty well the same thing, because you can't get away from it. The minute you fixate the world, the world is out there like it is. That collapses as soon as you see, yes, but what is the mind that looks at it? What shape is the mind? The mind sees the world in the shape that the mind wants to see it. So the mind is shaped to see the world as a shape. So everything is kind of shaping itself from nothing. And that understanding is scary, because it makes everything rather groundless. Meditation sometimes is scary because we find, where's the ground? Joseph once said, when you go into meditation, sometimes you feel groundless. There's no ground. And it's like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. And it's really scary, except when you realize there's no ground. So there's nothing can happen to you. You're just flying. So there's no way that we can really define what is the world, because the only way we know it is with a mind that's made by it. I hope I'm not confusing you too much. But we can't define what is the world, because the tool we have to know the world is made by the world. So it's kind of it brings us to a lot of mystery, but also a lot of wisdom there. And here is the place of karma. Karma is the way the thing keeps rolling. So a mind is made to see the world like that. This mind is made to see the world, and the world looks like that because of this mind that looks at it. My dog has another mind which sees the world in its way. It is made to see the world as a dog world, which will be different from the way you and I see it. But then everyone here is going to see the world totally differently. So there isn't a world. Karma is the waves, the habits, the constructions, and the way they keep rolling. They seem to keep going because of what happened before, because of the habit. One way of describing karma is habit energy, an energy that keeps rolling. To keep making, when we wake up in the morning, Nathanael, you wake up in the morning and you say, oh, here I am again. Same Nathanael. Here we go. I know this one. That's karma. We wake up apparently the same. There's something rolling. There's something keeping habit going. It keeps cycling around. But it's really, again, it's in the end based on something totally undefinable, that has no basis. We don't know the basis. That's why Buddhist teaching is basically without a creator. En bore olam, en creator of the world. The world is creating itself, rolling along, based on what was. And the the famous phrases of causation is simply that the Buddha talked about was because of this, then that. Because this arises, then that arises. Because this stops, then that stops. So it doesn't give us anything to hang on to. There's no hook to hang on to this. What can we hang on to? But in the end, if we just allow that to be as a kind of place to live, there is a lot of freedom in that as well. Because the opposite is that we're living in a constructed world, and the things are like that, it has to be like that, it's got to be, it hasn't got to be, this is the way it is. It remains a world of boxes. And in a way, that's more problematic. So I'll give you an example which is very relevant to the situation today. In the book of Job, Sefer Iyov, the big, big problem, which is just what all of us, in a way, are struggling with right now, where does all the suffering come from? Iyov, Job, I'm a good person. I kept all the rules. I was really, did everything right. And where does the suffering, why do I suffer? What is suffering? Why is it that good men suffer and bad men often don't? Where's the source of that? And the book, is a huge exploration of this basic struggle that we have in a way right now. Trying to make sense of something that, in a way, cannot be understood with the normal mind. And it took a whole book with the most amazing poetry and wisdom in the book. In the end, he gave up. There isn't an explanation. And the answer in the end came from God, in other words, from beyond, and it didn't give an answer. Because good and bad, or suffering and the duality, isn't something in the universe. As Shakespeare said, there isn't good or bad, it's thinking that makes it. The universe doesn't have it in it as a language of good and bad, but a person, a subject, the thinking person says, I want to know. It's got to make sense. Reward and punishment has to, isn't that the way things go? No. In an ultimate sense, no. So at the end of the book, God just simply says, look at the universe. And he gave examples of animals just living, and the deer on the hills, and the leviathan in the ocean, and it was just a world of play, playfulness of life. You can't know the rules. The rules don't, it doesn't fit our human rules. So how does it kind of help us? The first thing is to keep challenging our beliefs about the way things should be. Just challenge the beliefs that we have about the way things ought to be. And gradually drop that, drop the need inside for some sort of need for safety, because I need to make everything make sense. But there's a deeper place to live, which is to live much more in the sense of the possibilities of this moment. The dynamic, if we see, for example, that we're constantly making ourselves and we are less trapped by habit energy, I have to be like this, I need to be like that, what I want has to happen, this has to happen, this has to happen. There's a lot more freedom in our life to change, to develop, to go to places that we don't know, to explore, to have adventure, to be playful. Suddenly our worlds open up if we are less trapped in belief systems. And we were talking about it here in this retreat. We're talking about building of a self as a summary, that we make all the times summaries. I am, I am, I am, but it's a summary. Actually, what we are is constant dynamic creation of this moment of the person, the subject, and the world. It's free, it's open. And the person is a community, is a whole. Is like someone once said, a great philosopher, a human being is like a swarm of bees. A swarm, you know, what's the word? Like we're moving like a swarm of impulses and needs and thoughts and memories and intentions and experiences and so on, all collected together. We call this swarm a person. So the wisdom is to see this in process, the way we build ourselves and the world moment by moment. And there is the practice and there is the wisdom where we sit quietly. We're not sitting to shut up the mind. We're sitting in order to open the mind and open the heart and see the way we build ourselves. We constructed our experiences. Our experiences are dynamic and free. And if we know that and we experience it again and again in a meditation session and in our whole life, we find ourselves living in a much bigger, freer world. And this has a very powerful effect on what we do in our life. Our actions come from another place completely. We'll talk about that in a minute. Karma will tell us. Karma is like the butterfly effect, effecta parpar. Something happens somewhere and just goes out in the world. On the other side of the world, something happens. If you want to chase it all back, it needs the most enormous computer in the whole universe to try and work out why the butterfly here made someone fall over in China. Because everything is interconnected, everything is influencing everything else. The waves are touching each other. There's endless waves, but it gives us a lot of support also, because nothing is lost. One of the rules of karma is nothing is lost. We don't know where things are going to go. We don't know. They can change the universe. One word that we say, one thought, goes out in the world as a wave, like a butterfly. And we can be conscious of that. Which gives us a lot of support. All of this is in a very, I would say, what the Buddha said is the basic Dharma teaching, which is everything I've said now is in a constructed kind of teaching called Paticca-samuppada, dependent origination, Hitavutbuddhne. It basically means that everything is just relationship. Everything is in intimate relationship. The world is a relationship. It's not, there's no things. Everything is making everything else. Because of this, then that. That's what I said before. That's the summary of Paticca-samuppada, is that one liner. Because of this, then that. Because that isn't, then that is not. If that is, then that. When we think of something, when we experience something, when we hear something, something happens, we build a response, we build a thought, we build a need, we build a craving, we build an attachment, and then we build a self. out of that, we make a self that is experiencing that, and then we have a self which is problematic. We build out of all these, and we do it 1,000 times a day, 1,000,000 times a day, with every experience we're constructing. So it's a teaching well worth exploring for us. There's courses on it, there's books on it, and well worth. It's a very profound teaching, but it really helps us to see how we fabricate our world and how we can undo it. We can quieten it. We can be softer about constructing a world. Or we know we're doing it. So in relation to actions, so one of the places that karma operates in a way is through our intentions. What is it that we want to do? What is it that drives us? What's our intention? Can we refine, purify, clarify our intentions? Can we work with our intentions and see what they are and see whether they're helpful? Can we go one more step and say, what are my intentions and where they take me? And this is really important because, for example, what's the intentions behind violence? What's the intentions behind love? What are we missing? What are we not doing? The article I wrote about the Gaza war has been 4 times. I have the same article. It's in my book as well, but I wrote it before the book. Same article, exactly the same, but every time changing the date. That's all. I didn't change anything. I just changed the date. And I rewrote the article 4 times with a different date because the war comes going around every few years. It means something wasn't done. So what's the intention? Something wasn't done. And the teaching of causes and conditions, the Paticca Samuppada, is really important in our life. We, instead of saying, I need this, we say, what are the seeds I'm sowing? That's exactly the way that the samsara goes around. What seeds am I sowing? What conditions am I making for something to happen? What ground is like? Also in the Kabbalah, I love the image of the gardener. The image of the gardener is an important image in Kabbalah as well. We are like gardeners, and we sow seeds. The gardener doesn't sow a seed and say, no. I sowed my seed a minute ago. Where's the cabbage? The gardener sows the seed, puts the water, puts food, puts care, puts attention and patience, and then eats the fruit. So the gardener, it works all the time with conditions to create results rather than expectations or needs or sivatiyut. Causation. So we need to look and see what our intentions are when we think about what to do in our life. And our intentions is where we make karma. Karma is made through intentions. A very famous image is that someone cutting someone with a knife. If he's a surgeon, he's healing. If he's stabbing someone else, he's killing. What's the difference? The action is the same. The difference is the intention. Intention makes karma. Intention makes more of itself. I know it's easy to go into a place that says, well, if my intention is good, why are the results, like the story of Eeyore, why are the results so bad? It happens to all of us. My intentions are good. I was doing something good and I got ricochet on my head. Or someone, I wanted to bring love and someone, and I got attacked. It's because karma doesn't work in this cause and effect. It's not simple at all. Exactly the story of Eeyore. We can't expect, because the rules of karma are not the rules that we have in our mind of cause and effect. It's the butterfly, like I said, the butterfly effect is so much bigger. It's the totality of influences, ashpa'ot, of causes and conditions are such a big network which we can never understand it. The Buddha himself said, don't even try to understand karma, because it's so big that the mind which is made by karma can no way understand it. So where you get a limited view of karma, which someone would say, if you were a thief, then in your next life you'll have no money, something. It's childish. Doesn't work like that. This simple linear sibati of cause and effect is not in the real world. It's just in an unreal world of childish sense of I need some sort of black and white. But the world isn't black and white. So in that case, what do we do with our intentions if we don't have expectations for a result? Then do we cancel our intentions? The answer, of course not. We let go of results, but our intentions create gifts to the world. Our intentions make things happen. And through all we've got to offer to the world is the qualities and the powers that we have. So this attitude, this direction, I'm offering to the world what I can, is different from I want this and I want the result. We offer ourselves. That's all we can do. We offer the best we can. And life after that does what it wants with our offering. And we are not in control. So it takes away, it's a huge difference, because our mind is built on success and failure. We're all the time busy with itzlachti, lo itzlachti. Also echoes out there, natzer. It's not like that. We offer what we can to the world, and the world after that does what it can. And the best thing we can do is offer the best we are. That's the best we can do. We can't do more than that. The best we can be, we offer that and say, here I am, this is what I can give the world. So it's about a different point of view. Instead of saying, I'm doing something to get a result, we say, I'm doing something because it's the right thing to do and I'm offering it right now. And this is what I can give. And karma will have to look after the rest. whatever, with no guarantees that we're not going to get a boom back on us. So when we look at action, action is just the energy coming from intention. We have an intention, and the action is an energy that comes out of that. The intention moves karma some way, and off we go. And the rest is just rolling. So there is a lot of teaching in the world, and this is something that I really would like you to explore shortly, how to refine our intentions, how to work with our intentions, how to develop our intentions. And here is a really big reflection, and also a lot of practice. On a one level, the Dharma really defines that where our intention should be. On a simple level, our intention should be, the one word that's used in the tradition is kusala. Kusala means our intention is to be like a mother. Our intention is feeding the world. Our intention is harmony. Kusala is translated in English in the text as something wholesome, healthy, harmony, feeding. And so we can ask ourselves, is my intention healthy? Does it feed others? Does it feed myself? Does it feed? Is it mothering? Is it? And that's always something, because cheshbon nefesh, that we can do with our intentions. And I want to go for a minute to a non-dual place, to an ultimate place, and kind of throw one or two things out there, because you have to believe, but giving a sense of a bigger picture, which is just, for example, what happened to Eov at the end of the book when he got a bigger picture from above, from beyond the mind. There is a place where karma stops. And we do know that place. When we are deeply quiet, meditating quietly, stillness, no intention, no habit, no Stephen, gone, just existence, then no karma is made. And that's one of the places where experiencing stopping of karma, the chain of habit, is a way of freeing us from it. But it's not enough. Because we can experience stopping karma, it helps us to understand there is a place. We don't need to be caught up running round the circle like a kind of a hamster in a cage going around on the wheel. Or again, from the Kabbalah, Zohar, there's an image of samsara. I'm using two different languages here. But it's like insects going up a jar and falling down. Insect going up and falling down. We can get off that. We don't need to be there. And one of the places that we can feel is the place, Bemet, of stopping, of stillness, of concentration, of jhana, of deep quiet, when actually nothing is, that we get off the wheel there. There's no fabrication. And a lot of the gift of anatta, of non-self, of being less of a person, which includes being more questioning about what this person is, it gets us off the wheel. We're not so busy making ourselves all the time. I have to be. I need to be. It's helpful to be. I just want to give a story from the last Dharma seminar of Leela and myself. When I remember the men's group, which really left a strong impression on me. So it was around the issue of gender, the last Dharma seminar, and I was part of a men's group. And there were like 12 or 13 guys. And all of them, and everyone, had moved away from a kind of very male, alpha male style model of what my life is. I'm an officer in the army, I'm managing a company, I need to be there, successful, I was getting money, I was this, I was that. Really, and all of them, everyone, had moved to question that and were much happier, not locked in the track of being alpha male, but also much more, much less clear on who I am. And on a journey of discovery, which was less clear, the model that society gave me, I no longer believe it 100%. So there is uncertainty in that. There is even some pain in that, of who am I now? But none would go back to the previous construction of the alpha male that my parents and the society and the school made me. So this is an example of getting off the wheel. But in that, there's an ultimate point of view which I don't want you to think about. Okay? Don't think about it. It's not something to be thought about. And the ultimate point of view is karma doesn't exist. It's a point of view of a self. Dharma Dhatu, space of Dharma. Instead of karma, there is space. There is space of Dharma. There is space of a deep interconnectedness of everything. Nothing is happening there. We're all just being. There's being happening. There's nothing making this happen or that happen. The totality of being is happening. This is an ultimate point of view, Amukhla. And it feels like Tohu Vavohu, but it's a very big place of realization of the interconnectedness of everything, when everything is just being. There isn't karma because there's nothing making anything else. It may not, I'm not saying it's relevant to you, I'm just saying that it's good that you have a sense. It's when there is less point of view of me and the world, the realizations of Dharma Dhatu, of Tathagata, who is the name that the Buddha gave himself, which is basically, I just gone to isness, that, tat, same word in English, tat. That's when, if you ask what the world is, it's tat, tata, tatata in the tradition, it's that. That's it, all you can say, it's that, isness. Here, name of God, right? Is. So in that place, nothing really is happening. I would like to read to you how Nisargadatta Maharaja, a great non-dual sage, answered to someone that says, "Well, I need karma. Isn't karma what I need in order to help make the world a better place?" And Nisargadatta Maharaj, who is total and kind of uncompromising, coming from, is the most uncompromising teacher of the non-dual, of the ultimate, that I've ever read. He goes all the way, and he never dresses up to make what he says understandable. It's unbelievable. So someone said, you know, isn't karma, do I need karma to make the world a better place? It's pulling me towards liberation and perfection. And Nisargadatta Maharaj said, that's what people told you. You're already perfect, here and now. There's nothing that pushes you anywhere. You are as you believe yourself to be. So stop believing. Stop believing that you are anything. It is the refusal to examine where you are that creates karma. And it is not working with your own suffering that keeps karma going. Karma is only a store of unspent energies, of unfulfilled desires and fears that are not understood and not worked with. And you're constantly renewing the store by new desires and new fears. Understand that the basic cause of your fears is being disconnected from who you really are, and of your desires is your longing to be who you are. And your karma will dissolve like yesterday's dream if you go there. A final word. The big picture isn't something that cancels out how we are in the world. And the great teachers, non-dual teachers, Tibetan, Indian, everyone, will say, think big, but act carefully. Because you don't know where the ricochet is coming from. Just act right. Padmasambhava, the great Tibetan teachers, had a Tibetan version of, a believe in God, but don't forget to tie your camel. Right? So the Padmasambhava had a Tibetan version of that, which was keep your view as wide as the sky, but sieve your actions, masanen, sieve your actions as like sieving fine flour. So it's kind of worth remembering that the small things make a difference. The big view is our view of freedom, but it's not the cheshbon, it's not at the expense of taking care, of being the gardener, of taking care what seeds we sow and looking after them. Then it's not instead of that, it's through that. Okay, so that's what I want to say for the moment.